Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Hump Day edition of the Yard. Tomorrow, Mississippi State has its day. Down in Tampa at SEC Media Days, Greg Sankey shared earlier this week that Media Days will be in Nashville next week. Also, mid-July, I believe the 12th through the 15th. We don't know what day we'll be going, but yeah, they're moving it around. To be honest with you, I don't know why we don't just do it in Birmingham, but nobody asked me to vote. But nevertheless, Tampa was a weird choice. Dave Murray will be there for us tomorrow. Dave already on the scene down there. We'll have full coverage of everything Mississippi State coaches and players had to say at jeanspage.com for free on Thursday. We'll discuss some of that on Friday's show. We'll spend some time this first segment talking about some of the things that Greg Sankey addressed in his SEC Media Day State of the Union annual address. And I think that's important for us to kind of go back and look and see exactly what he said and kind of what's facing the league and college athletics as a whole. We have a top 10 list by request. Update you on some baseball portal and recruiting stuff, as well as some signings. And then you never know what else we may get into in our potpourri segment of the show. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. We love them. They love us. But we loved them before they loved us. And it's been a great partnership for a long time now. Again, we were one of the first customers. Brian Haydad and I were among the first customers to break bread there. And I think we both walked away impressed. And here we are all these many years later, and Bulldog Burger Company still going strong. Yeah, for sure. If you ask your kids, hey, where you guys want to eat, they're going to say Bulldog Burger Company. Just go ahead and save everybody the guesswork and go ahead and put it in the GPS if you don't know where it is. I'll make it easy for you. Three great locations, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area, and, of course, University Drive here in Stark, Vegas. We love Bulldog Burger Company. They help us keep our youthful appearance with those spring rolls. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. And find your own favorites on the menu. A lot to choose from. I love the diversity of choice at Bulldog Burger Company. While they specialize in hamburgers, it's not all they do. Ask about the specials. Ask about the maybe seasonal shakes, and you can get those shakes to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, before we get into Sankey's statements, I have a bit of a grievance to air. You know, I live here in Starkville. I love living here in Starkville. It's not a perfect place, but I love it. I love my neighbors. I love the local businesses. I love the fact that we support so much small business in the greater Starkville area. It's a wonderful thing. We get out and support our neighbors. We do. A lot of people say, hey, why don't you have this? Why don't you have that? Well, the truth of the matter is we just don't go to those places. You know, we'd rather go to Harvey's, you know, or the Grill, or, you know, Big Bulldog Burger Company. You know, we love supporting our neighbors. And that money, of course, stays within the region. You know, that's an important aspect. You know, there, a lot of national chains out there do a good job. But I never know where that money's going to go. When I spend my money with a Starkville merchant, I know some of that money's going to go to Mississippi State. Some of it's going to go for the betterment of Starkville. And some of it's going to go for the continuation of a great business that I love here in my home. But I don't know. Listen, some people locally wanted me to run for mayor. I have no interest in cutting my hair and getting a real job and abandoning all this. And I have a real job, but you understand my point. I don't want to work a regular schedule like everybody else. All that, you know, grabassery and all that stuff that goes along with it. It's not really my thing. But I tell you this, days like today, I think maybe I should run. I'm not going to. But I think maybe I should or somebody should. And the reason that I say that, and again, I don't know what it takes to run a city. Okay, so I'm coming to you of a position of ignorance. But as a denizen of Starkville, I have the right to have some opinions. As a taxpayer and a resident, I have some opinions. And I don't know what we're doing with a lot of this construction stuff. Now, number one, I will say, I understand that there is inconvenience associated with progress. Absolutely understand that, and much of it is temporary. I just hope it's worth it in the end. But somebody's infinite wisdom decided that, hey, it's the first week of school. Let's go pave all the streets around the schools. And not all the schools, but most of them, right? And so how I stumbled upon this, because I will be honest with you, and I hate to say this, but in the interest of transparency, I just don't go downtown a lot anymore because it is so difficult to get down there. I never know from one week to the next which streets are closed. And then, like, I used to keep up, like, on the Facebook page, and then I would find that even though the construction had moved somewhere else, there was still a lot left to be done in the other areas. And you feel like you're driving a wagon in the old 1800s. You know, it's kind of bumpy. Not that Ruby's not up for it, but I don't want to put her through more than I have to. But anyway, so I go to my bank to deposit some checks, which is always great. Go to my ATM on 12, and it reads all the checks as zero. So then it's like you try it twice, and it's like, I guess I got to go downtown. Okay, well, I don't want to have to go navigate through all that. So I'm going to take that turn at Avenue of Patriots and just kind of mosey on around, and I'll just go into town that way. None of that. We got it all under construction. So not only, you know, are some of the surface streets leading to downtown under construction, and certainly Main Street is under construction, but now streets between 12 and downtown are also under construction. So we've got 182 under construction. We've got Main Street under construction. And then we have a tributary off of 12 to get to Main Street under construction. I thought maybe it was just me. Maybe I'm having a bad day, right? Maybe it's just, you know, something I just stumbled upon. No, but that's not the case. As soon as I sit down to eat a late lunch, I get out the old trusty iPhone and think I'll just, peruse social media while I'm waiting for my food to be prepared. And lo and behold, the first post that I see is somebody complaining about all of this. It's like, you know, we had 6 weeks when nobody was in school that we could have tackled this. I don't know what it takes to run a city, which is why I didn't run for mayor. That, in fact, I want to get a haircut. But also, too, I don't know what it takes to work in construction. And I know that everybody's got a schedule, but I would suspect that we didn't just wake up on Sunday and say, hey, let's go pave these streets. I suspect that plan's probably been in place for months, if not weeks. And I feel like as a city and as a customer of these particular construction groups, and of course, they just go by what's offered to them. I'm not in any way being critical of them, that we could have somehow done this when the kids weren't in school. It's just my opinion. But it is an absolute disaster. And to see dozens of people in that one thread and to find other threads that I just, because, you know, your algorithm just kind of gives you what you consume. I just said, yeah, this is enough. But I don't know what's going on, but it was clearly a bad decision. And that's one of the things that concerns me most is how much care and concern are these decisions being made with in relation to our residents. We are not just a tourist destination. We got a lot of people who live here 365 days a year. And at the end of the day, those are the people that are supporting the infrastructure. They're the taxpayers. They're the voters. But it seems like every time I turn around, we're being even more inconvenienced. And again, I hate to come off sounding like a whiner. But again, sometimes I get a little reclusive this time of year. You know, I just kind of stay home. I may run up to the country store and get a plate lunch, or go grab a snack, just get out of the house, and I don't always make my way to town. But to see the angst among my neighbors that had to deal with this surprise, and again, I go down to the bank downtown and can't park out front now. They decided that on Monday, and had to park, basically a couple blocks away and then walk down. Not that I'm opposed to walking, but it's incredibly inconvenient, right? And not that I need everything to be, tailored to my convenience. I just think about, what are we doing to those downtown merchants? And there's already a toll that's been taken. If you haven't been downtown in a while, and again, my anxiety won't let me go down there and deal with all that, because there's only a few places to park anyway. But you go downtown, you'll see there are some storefronts that are vacant. And that has been a rarity in Starkville in the time that I have lived here. And so everybody says, well, it eventually will be worth it. Well, it's not going to be worth it to that person that had to file bankruptcy. It's not going to be worth it to that merchant downtown that decided, I'm just going to go ahead and retire. I'm just going to go ahead and buy out of this thing. And so it's just frustrating that it's so difficult to go support our neighbors. And people are like, well, Steve, it's only temporary. It's been 2 years now. And it's only getting worse. And I remember, and I had this discussion with some people in city government, when we put the medians in on 12, which was a great thing. It was a great thing, because I can't count how many times I'm driving down 12 going to campus, and then I got some kid cutting across five lanes of traffic to go get chicken tenders, right? And I had somebody from MDOT that listens to this show that contacted me and said that, hey, Steve, I heard you talk about this on the show. Starkville has the highest number of accidents per capita in the state. And so that's been alleviated, and it looks so much nicer. And it took some time to get used to. We have to take a few more U-turns and things like that, but they've done a good job accommodating that, and it's just a safer thoroughfare. But it looks a lot nicer. In addition to that, safety should come first, aesthetics should come second, but it looks nicer. It looks like, looks like somebody lives here. But I'll tell you this, man. Every time, I guess I'm lucky. I'm just lucky. Because every time that I drove down 12 during the construction and the landscaping of those medians, it was always break time. Always break time. And as somebody who is a workaholic, I just find that stuff offensive. I don't have to work out in the sun, and I'm sympathetic to those that do. That said, if you're on break when I pass by, going to grab lunch, and I'm getting it to go, and then I come back, and it's still break time, and then I got to run to Walmart later, and it's break time, we're not asking enough. That's my opinion. And there are a lot of people that tell me that I expect too much from people, and I'll die on that hill. I expect everybody to work when they're getting paid. I don't care what industry you work in. And there's a lot of people, even within my industry, that couldn't work for me. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp.com. You guys know me well. You know that I'm very much an advocate for therapy. We've had a great partnership with BetterHelp for a long time now, but I don't know that you've gotten to see the reviews. We've had some Boneyard listeners that have reached out and said, Steve, I tried BetterHelp. We absolutely love it. You can see those reviews for yourself at BetterHelp.com/reviews. You can see it in real time, right? The reviews are updated daily with hundreds of people saying how much they love BetterHelp and how useful it's been to them. So visit BetterHelp.com/reviews. See for yourself. You'll see why the average live therapy session rating is 4.9 out of 5 stars based on over 1.7 million client session reviews. The feedback from people is honest and earnest. If you've got something bothering you, if you need to sit down and talk with someone, visit BetterHelp.com and check it out today. See the reviews, see what stands out, and see if BetterHelp is right for you. Visit BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. because we have expectations and standards that have to be met. And if you're not willing to pay the price of greatness, then, you know, please stop trying to suggest to people that you're great. Because you're not. You don't know it. You just won't admit it to anybody but yourself. All that understood, let's jump into this Greg Sankey thing now that my Robertson rant is over. You know, let's start with the Protect College Sports Act. You know, I contacted Senator Wicker's office back in June, about a month ago, and just kind of wanted to know, hey, why did he vote against this? Because, like, if you're like me, you know, it's so difficult for me at times to just kind of dedicate some time to really research particular topics, especially in the summer when we've got, in June especially, because we have, you know, we have prospect camps, we got college baseball to deal with, postseason, thank God, and then we've got official visits. So there's a lot of time that we spend, it's very labor intensive. And so I began to educate myself on the Protect College Sports Act after reaching out to Senator Wicker. He is one of our state senators, and so I thought, hey, he voted against this. I'm a sports journalist in Mississippi. He represents me, my listeners, my subscribers. So I feel like that they, we're entitled to an explanation. Well, we got one. And then as we began to talk to other people in Starkville and around the state, we found out that, hey, Wicker is basically voting the will of State and Ole Miss, right? State and Ole Miss, part of the Southeastern Conference, the SEC is opposed to the legislation as it's written. But you see, Protect College Sports Act is like, yes, I'm in favor of that. But then, like everything else in politics, you've got to read the full bill. And like, I don't know if you know this, we had a bill that passed earlier today, a federal bill, to prevent people and their spouses that are in office for buying individual stocks. Attached to that was I haven't read all the language yet, was a national voter ID for voting. Yeah, that's, it's always something attached to it. So my dad used to say, my dad, Freddie Robertson, worked for the federal government for 33 years with the United States Department of Agriculture. So he saw a lot of wasteful spending, shall we say. And he talked about one of the greatest pieces of legislation that ever happened in the American government was the line item veto. Because what would happen, it's like, and unbeknownst to a maybe naive public, is we would have a bill, right? There'd be a bill, like, you know, to fund the government or something. And all you know is, hey, this is what the budget's going to be. And they're arguing over this. Well, then you find out there was all this pork attached to a bill. It's like, hey, well, we want to give $25 million for the preservation of the snow owl habitat in New Mexico. Well, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm being a little bit facetious, right? So they would attach all these little things onto these bigger bills, and then because you had the line item veto, you could just put a line through those things and then adopt the rest of the bill into law, right? So that's kind of where we are with this Protective College Sports Act is, hey, on paper, it sounds great, but it's probably great for the G5 schools, more so than maybe the Big Ten and certainly the SEC. Some of the issues that are at play here are, number one, pooling the media rights of the whole conference. That makes the most sense, right? And as a little aside to that, too, you remember we kind of got bamboozled, the university presidents did, in voting for a 9 SEC game schedule. Because we were kind of led to believe there would be an expansion of the college football playoff, and then there wasn't, and all we've done now is make life harder on ourselves. I think your good friend and host has been very consistent on that for years, that we don't need the 9-game SEC schedule. And now you find out that ESPN's in a financial crunch, and they're having to lay off, you know, multi-million-dollar talents that have been with them for 30-plus years, like Carl Ravitch, right? All these layoffs, and so you went and did the 9-game SEC schedule in hopes of getting more money on the TV deal because you pull your media rights. And now your host media company is laying off people left and right. What kind of confidence do we have they're going to be able to fulfill that agreement long term? right? Second thing is there's a cap. There was 10 suggestions sent by the SEC to kind of tailor this bill to make it more palatable for the league. But the media pulling rights is part of it, but also, too, there's a cap. There's like they want to cap the profits, which is like the dumbest thing. It works against free enterprise. Why would we cap a very popular league's ability to make money to fund itself, especially in a very challenging environment where rev share and NIL compensation are at the forefront of every decision that we make, right? So that's two of the bigger issues that the SEC has contention with. So here's Sankey's comments about some of this, and we'll stop from time to time just to kind of provide some color. Sankey says, through the fall, the winter, and into the spring, bipartisan work produced a focus in the House of Representatives on the SCORE Act. Earlier this summer, Senators Ted Cruz and Maria Cantwell introduced the Protect College Sports Act. I want to be clear that we appreciate the tremendous efforts that have gone into these legislative drafting initiatives. We're engaged specifically now in ongoing dialogue around improving the Protect College Sports Act. I also want to note, because he's one of the senators in our footprint, the engagement and the work of Senator Schmidt from Missouri. You may not know Senator Schmidt, but he did make SportsCenter's top 10 plays, one of his catches during the congressional baseball game earlier this summer. The Senate bill contains many provisions that we support, and I think are both healthy for college athletics and the participants in college athletics. Just quickly, that includes enhanced expectations for student-athlete health and safety, supporting educational opportunities, providing scholarship protections, overseeing agent activity, increasing the participation of student-athletes in governance, which we as a conference have led in that area for years and actually decades, and those national standards of which I spoke, particularly in eligibility and transfers. We support the effort behind the Protect College Sports Act. However, we believe changes to the Act are necessary to make it most effective. The changes we've suggested are most achievable and reasonable, and we're committed to working with Congress to move the legislation across the finish line. End of quote. That's the money quote to me, right? Everything else kind of leads to this, is we believe that the changes that we're offering are reasonable, and we are committed, big word, to move this legislation across the finish line. So while yes, the SEC has problems with the bill as it's written, the way that I understand Sankey's comments is like, yeah, we recognize we have to get a deal done. And so we want to work with Congress to ensure we get a deal done to have federal oversight. Some of you, it's like, it's the common comment, well, we don't want the federal government in college athletics. Well, without them, none of this mess is going to get cleared up. You know, it's like the old Ronald Reagan quote, I'm here from the government, I'm here to help. Yeah. But this is something that, you know, back in 2023, the SEC sent athletes, coaches, ADs to Washington, D.C. to meet with people about trying to get federal oversight 4 seasons ago. That's what we did. Zach Arnett went for us. He was our coach that summer. And so this is something that the SEC has been very proactive about. So it's not like the SEC is anti-federal oversight. Greg Sankey has basically begged Capitol Hill to do something to help bring some sense of control to everything. And ultimately, I do believe we will get a deal done. Is it the Protect College Sports Act? I don't know. I think that's probably the closest thing. And maybe you've got to implement some of the things that Tommy Tuberville suggested in his legislation. And, of course, he's now aligned with Wicker. And, again, they're voting the will of their constituency. And so it's important that, number one, we get a deal done, but one that makes sense for SEC and ultimately Mississippi State. Back to some of these comments. Sankey says, there are four principles that we believe should guide this legislative effort at this time. The first is about those national standards, which must be enforceable. And this is important. If Congress establishes national rules, individuals and organizations who comply with those rules should not be subject to litigation simply for following the law. Without meaningful legal protections, we risk the continuing cycle of uncertainty that has been part of our challenge in college athletics in recent years. End of quote. This goes right back to the Trinidad Chambliss situation. It goes right back to Diego Pavia thing. Everybody involved agreed to the rules of the NCAA before they began playing in the NCAA. Then we get in, and all of a sudden we feel like we should be treated special. There should be a sense of entitlement. We're being treated unfairly. And every time the NCAA has put forth a new rule trying to govern this and, again, put some guardrails around the ridiculous transfer process we have now, it ends up in court. And then some advocate, donor, judge will do something that benefits their team, not understanding or really showing any concern for how it affects college athletics as a whole. So this limited antitrust exemption would protect the NCAA and the schools and give everybody involved a chance to enforce the rules that everybody agreed to from the beginning. Back to Sankey's comments. Second, the framework should be truly national. The legislation moves us in the right direction, but it should more fully replace the growing patchwork of state laws that are conflicting and create competitive differences based upon state borders. Remember that quote from our student athletes? We just want to know that others are held to the same standards. End of quote. You recall back in 2021 when NIL became a thing, we're 5 years into this thing now. The schools of the SEC, mainly Mississippi, Alabama, were pretty progressive getting an NIL law passed. But it was somewhat limited and stringent. Of course, people have tried to use the revisionist history to kind of push their own narratives about certain people that were in leadership at the times. But in the state of Utah, there was a state law that was passed 5 years ago that enabled state-funded institutions within the state of Utah to be involved with NIL and to set up deals and to find people to fund NIL deals, despite the fact that it flew in the face of the NCAA rules on name, image, and likeness. That's basically what we're talking about here. And you got some other states out there like Louisiana, you know, trying to find a way to get a competitive advantage, to get more money pushed towards their state institutions, and hey, maybe that's their job. The problem is that when you've got this patchwork of state laws, as Sankey says, we have to have a level playing field. We have to. We can't have LSU operating under one set of rules and in state and Ole Miss another. Everybody has to have the same standards. Back to Sankey. Third, transparency and accountability are essential. Rules governing name, image, and likeness are only effective if they can be enforced. That requires meaningful transparency so everyone operates under the same expectations and the same level of accountability. Without it, loopholes undermine the competitive fairness expectation. End of quote. That's all anybody wants, right? There are a lot of people very anti-NIL. What's not going away? You know, we're 5 years into this, and if anything, it's gotten bigger, right? And maybe it's not the challenge it was 3 years ago, but it's still an issue. And there are people out there that are constructing NIL deals to get through NIL Go that they know are not proper. And so when you put this framework together, it has to be a consistent enforcement for everybody. A deal that is legal in Alabama should be legal in California. A deal that's in Texas should be legal in Mississippi. Right? Everybody should operate under the same rules when it comes to NIL funding. Everybody. Back to Sankey. Fourth and finally, the legislation should treat similarly situated organizations equally while preserving institutional choice. Whether discussing conference structure or media rights, federal law should establish fair and consistent standards, not different rules for different organizations. They should preserve the voluntary decision-making rather than mandating outcomes. End of quote. This kind of goes back to what we were talking about with pulling media rights and, of course, capping. Like, you know, let's be honest. The Sun Belt is never going to reach the cap when it comes to revenue spending. It's never going to happen. But the SEC might. And so then you cap them. And I understand people are like, hey, we want a level playing field. Well, you know, when you've got teams that are funding football at a different level than others, those teams that are fully funding it should get a greater say. They shouldn't be handicapped. It's kind of like we talk about in college baseball, right? And again, somebody that I love and respect in the college game told me, he goes, Steve, the fact that Monmouth's vote counts the same as LSU is a joke. And that's how this thing works in football too. So do you think, in all due respect to Southern Miss, right, do you think Southern Miss is in favor of State and Ole Miss making more money? Well, no. But at the same time, too, Southern Miss would not want to be in a situation where their ability to raise money was capped just because they're in the Premier League, right? And again, that's not a shot at Southern Miss. It just doesn't apply to them. They're not going to reach the cap. They're not going to have a media deal anywhere close to what the SEC or the Big Ten does. So they're going to go along with it because it doesn't negatively impact them. A couple other things, too, that Sankey said that I think are important for us to discuss today. These 10 concepts are not SEC issues. He didn't detail all of them out. They offer 10 common sense suggestions that track those four principles. Those are changes that we believe benefit all of college athletics in providing a national solution. Our recommendations are intended to help Congress achieve what our student athletes, our universities, and our fans desire. One national framework of meaningful protections for student athletes, enforceable rules, fair competition, and providing long-term stability. If Congress is going to act, and again, I believe it should, for the reasons identified, we have one opportunity to get this legislation right. If Congress passes a bill and it's signed into law, we won't be returning to D.C. in a year or two asking and receiving help to correct the gaps that exist. That's why it's important that these common sense areas be addressed now before the bill becomes law. End of quote. Part of that, too, as you guys are well aware, there's all this talk about, you know, breaking off. Sankey makes a great point. I'm not going to read you the quote, but he made a great point. If we break away from the NCAA, we still have the same problems. We're still back in a courtroom. We're still back where you've got different state laws that govern different NIL funding activities. Nothing changes if we break away, other than the fact that we no longer have the protection and the solidarity of the rest of the NCAA member institutions. So nothing is really gained. And even if we leave, we're all under the same umbrella in the eyes of federal oversight. And until there is a federal law, it's just going to be absolute chaos. Are things better than they were? Yes. And to deny that is to be disingenuous. Things are better, right? We got transfer windows now. I still don't like the unlimited transfer thing, as does Tommy Tuberville. He agrees with me. But at least now we have, a coach could go jump in a player's hindquarters because he didn't go to class and the kid just go get in the portal. And so that's been removed, right? Now you can't go do that. You can't just go jump in the portal because a coach hurt your feelings. You can quit the team if you want to, but you can't go get in the portal. And you can't go ahead and start negotiating with other teams about your exit strategy. And we talk about tampering and things of that nature, too. There's a lot of that that's popped up this week, and rightfully so. So let's talk about a Super League, and that's one of the things that the Protect College Sports Act kind of looks to prevent, is the Big Ten and the SEC like pulling away and making like a Super Football League. That's part of the provision of the law, the proposed law, pardon me. And so it appears to me, just based on the read and what Sankey had to say, is that, hey, we're okay with that. We're okay with not breaking away as long as we can get everything resolved. And that's kind of where we are. And I suspect that we will get a brokered deal, and not everybody's going to be happy with it. But at the end of the day, it's going to provide a sense of control for the NCAA to enforce its own rules and its member institutions to feel like that everybody is operating under the same guidelines. We absolutely do not have that now. We desperately need it. And it'll be interesting to see what happens here in the days to come. You know, everybody goes on vacation pretty soon, and there are a lot of people that want to call this for a floor vote in the Senate. But rumors about recent polling is they don't have the votes, because the majority of the SEC states are not going to vote with it, because they're going to vote the will of their constituency, which in turn is the SEC member institutions within their state. So we're getting there, but we're not there. And again, the fact Sankey, I think, again, is the leader of the resistance, as I wrote earlier today. If we can make him happy, and of course, while he is the commissioner, he works under the direction of the SEC university presidents, right? He is not like a dictator who just makes these decisions unilaterally. And so you make Sankey happy, which means you've made the SEC presidents happy, and in turn, the athletic directors and ultimately the coaches. Now, we're not all always going to agree on every facet of this legislation. But once the SEC says, okay, hey, thumbs up, let's get it done, it'll get done. It'll get done. It'll be different than it looks today, too. And there's just so much out there that needs to be done. And we may have to come back and do an amendment in a couple years. But the reality of it is we've got a chance to settle some things, but we can't do that at the expense of the SEC. And I think that's the way you have to look at it. It's like, yes, we all agree we need a sense of normalcy, transparency, and accountability and equality, but we're not going to sacrifice our long-term growth to achieve that, because other schools are not similarly situated with us, and so they're not affected by these bigger global issues within the legislation. So that's where that stands. I just wanted to offer you his comments, but also to some commentary to kind of localize the story just a little bit. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler, my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. And since we're all friends, you should have his phone number. Yeah, 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Save that number on your phone. His mortgage guy. He won't mind the fact that you just label him as mortgage guy. He won't be offended if you don't remember his name, because when you have the need, you may not remember the name, but you're going to need that number. Get his 25 years of expertise and know-how working for you. He can get you to the closing table when so many others can't. A lot of people out there vying for your business, but you know what? Your mortgage is too important to just trust to anyone. Stick with a winner. Stick with Blair Chandler. He's a Bulldog through and through, but he doesn't discriminate. If you're a fan of other schools, he'll be happy to do business with you. So whether it's your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, the only name to know is Blair Chandler when it comes to mortgage loan origination. Licensed to practice in multiple states. And maybe in the past you've been turned down. It maybe because you weren't ready, but maybe it's because you had the wrong loan officer. Give Blair a chance to help you. He would be glad you did. We've closed several loans for Boneyard listeners with Blair. You could be next. That's Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. Okay, Jeff hits us up. Jeff, I appreciate you. Thanks for listening and thanks for your support of the top 10. He's like, Steve, I had heard of Bad Omens, but then I've heard a lot about them on the show, and I began to dig deeper into the catalog, and they are my favorite modern rock band. You know what, Jeff? They're my favorite modern rock band, too. And you say, Steve, can you give me a little more? Well, you know, Jeff, you came to the right place. Because, yes, I can give you a little bit more. I can. Now, My favorite Bad Omens album, without any question, is The Death of Peace of Mind. And you know what the death of peace of mind is? According to Noah, it's love. Love is the death of peace of mind. And you know what? In some respects, that's true. Because when you're out here all footloose and fancy free and you have to wonder or worry about anybody else, you got peace of mind, right? But you fall in love with somebody, at times, you may have some moments of insecurity. You may have some moments of wonder. You know, maybe she's getting a haircut and doesn't have her phone handy. She didn't answer your text. You get a little nervous. And that's a you issue. That's it. Not a her issue. It's a you issue. But yeah, there's some parts of that that are true. Maybe it's a truism rather than an absolute truth of life. As I told the bride earlier today, I'm happy. Man, I'm happy. And not just because I came back from vacation. And I'll be honest with you guys, it has been a stressful week already. Come back from vacation, got a million things to worry about. But we're navigating them through. We're getting them done, you know. And sometimes you got to step on a toe or two. And you know me, that's not above me. As I told someone yesterday as we were navigating through a complicated issue, I said, you know, sometimes I can be a little bit uncouth. I know that about myself, but I am from South Mississippi, and we do not tolerate disrespect. So we can resolve this now, or I can drive the 4 hours to your office, and we can resolve it face-to-face, because either way, it's going to get resolved. I prefer to save myself the gas money and the mileage, and let's just get this resolved now. But either way, we're going to get it done. You know what? You know what happened? Woke up this morning, it's resolved, right? So I got to make the trip. But sometimes you got to speak up for yourself. I would say all times you have to speak up for yourself. In matters of love, sometimes it's good to keep your mouth shut, right? You just kind of keep the peace, keep your mouth shut to kind of keep things going along. Be careful with that. Don't become a doormat to anybody, especially somebody you love. If you got to be half of yourself to be part of a couple, then it's not the right relationship. I don't care how hot they are. If you've got to walk on eggshells to maintain a relationship, it's not the relationship with you, right? I never just say. There is some truth behind that. But Jeff says, okay, back to our top 10. There's some interesting collaborations out there, Jeff. Maybe you hadn't run along. Now, there was a remix album. They did some collabs. And some of those are going to be mixed in our top 10. And you can find them on the remix album. It's available on iTunes and Spotify. But there's some other collaborations that maybe you don't find in your Bad Omens library that I'm going to turn you on to today. I'm going to make you hip to some cool tracks. I love Bad Omens. And again, one of the reasons I love The Death of Peace of Mind is because it kind of combines like the favorite things, the things I love most about music, right? I love the falsetto. I love how it's kind of maybe put out there as a work of art against some incredibly heavy music. Like you hear this falsetto voice and then all of a sudden he changes to rage. I don't know that I've ever heard anyone on record or live that can go from their falsetto to screaming so effortlessly. It's incredible to me. And again, some of you say screaming. Well, some of the earlier stuff was kind of metalcore, so there was a lot more screaming. But all that I understood, this is an incredible band that kind of combines kind of some industrial stuff with Depeche Mode and some heavy stuff. And so it's kind of the best of both worlds when it comes to your good friend and host's favorite music. It's like Depeche Mode meets Skid Row almost. Almost, a little bit. So here we go. Number 10, off one of their albums, the remix album, it's V-A-N with Poppy. And this was like a collaboration they released after The Death of Peace of Mind, just to kind of stay relevant. And V-A-N stands for Violence Against Nature. And Poppy, of course, is a big superstar across the way. And so this is an interesting collaboration. And I think it works pretty well, but it is number 10 on my list. Number 9, a band that you're probably not familiar with. It's Thousand Below, and Noah sings on this one. The track is Hell Finds You Everywhere. Now, some people will hear that and think, oh, well, that must be a devil-worshipping song. Let's go burn records. No, it's not like that, okay? Basically, it's like evil is never far, right? And that's true for all of us, right? And it's so interesting, too. Like, you know, there's things that happen in life you think will never happen to you or your family, and you're wrong. You're wrong. There's a chance it's always going to happen, right? And it's important to be vigilant but also stay in the moment. But Hell Finds You Everywhere with Thousand Below, number nine. Number eight. When Dana and I went and saw Bad Omens at the Signal in Chattanooga, which is a fabulous venue, it was our 30-year anniversary trip, and went to Ruby Falls and all that good stuff, had some great meals up there. I love Chattanooga. I do. I love it. It's a great place. I hate driving through Chattanooga. When Dana was travel nursing in Knoxville, I'd always catch the traffic jam there at the Mountain Valley, you know, when you're navigating through up there. It was terrible. Once you got through Chattanooga, it was clear sailing, but man, it was tough. But I love Chattanooga itself, love Ruby Falls. But the band Era opened up for them. I had never heard them, really dig them. They collaborated on a track called Anything Greater Than Human. And again, it's an interesting track, kind of takes you a little bit of a journey. Now back to their remix album and their collabs album, a song that's a little bit interesting, to say the least. It's got a little more of an edge to it. It's Hedonist with Wargasm. Maybe you're not familiar with those guys. Innovative name, but that's one I think that you'll enjoy. Now, there's a controversial figure that collaborated on this other one. And of course, he collabed before all of the chaos. But number six is Terms and Conditions with Bob Vylan. And you can do your own research. He said some things that that made a lot of people upset, and he got banned from the United States. Which, you know, even though I don't agree with him, that's kind of rock and roll, right? That the United States banned you. Yeah. All right, number five. Again, back to that remix album. It's The Drain with Health and Swarm. And there's a lot of kind of techno, D-step type stuff in all this. If you like that sort of stuff, you'll dig it. Now, the top four, I could have made any of these number one. I could have made a case for any of them. And I kind of went a different direction with my number one just to kind of be weird. But number four, man, this is great in the car. You want to test out your speakers. You want to make sure that your hearing's still in good shape. This is the song for you. It's a track called Suffocate with Kayzo. K-A-Y-Z-O, Suffocate. It's kind of like Bad Omens meets Narcissistic Cannibal from Korn. If you know that track, and I love that track, it's incredible. This is in the same vein. Again, a lot of that, you know, electronic type music, it's a lot of heavy stuff, and then all of a sudden there's a breakdown, and you're just like, holy smokes, where am I? Great, great song, Suffocate with Kayzo, number four. Number three, love this one too, man. Love it. I didn't know much about this band, but it's one of those things like you put on Bad Omens radio, and next thing you know, it turns you on to some stuff that maybe you're not as familiar with, which is why Jeff comes to me. It's Novocaine, not the 10 Years track, but Novocaine with Too Close to Touch. This is a great song. I'm shocked that this wasn't a huge hit. Like, why wasn't this like number two or three on Biggin's Countdown on Sirius XM? Incredible. Why wasn't this like a big hit on Octane? And again, it shows you how watered down the music industry has become, that there's great songs out there that feature artists that you know that you're unaware of. It's just so difficult to get this stuff pushed out. And you know how it is on social media. You know, they can tweet it out, hey, new single just dropped, and you may not even see it because your algorithm maybe leads you away from it from time to time. But this is a song that is an absolute gem. Novocaine with Too Close to Touch. I encourage you to, Jeff, maybe give Too Close to Touch a little deeper listen. Number two, this has been on our list before, and I couldn't put it at number one, even though it technically is my favorite collaboration. It's Bad Omens with Corey Taylor from Slipknot doing Dust in the Wind. Now, nothing will ever compare to the original. Let's just go ahead and get that established. Nothing will ever compare. But this is a really good rendition. You know, we can't have a cover at number one. But if you love Dust in the Wind from Kansas, and as you should, this is kind of a modern take on that, and it's really cool. Number one, though, again, off the remix album, it's Nervous System with IRISEX, and it's a little different, right? I'm just telling you, it's a little different. But again, it shows the diversity of thought and creative intelligence of the band Bad Omens. There is a song in this catalog for everybody, right? They're like, if you put on The Death of Peace of Mind, right? And some of my favorite tracks are not the hits. I love Just Pretend, which is the TikTok song. That was kind of the gateway song for a lot of people. The Worst in Me was our gateway track. Back off the debut album. And I like Crawl a lot, too, off that debut album. But you bring out The Worst in Me. I love Glass Houses, and it's a little bit edgy, too. There's a lyric in there, and one of the things One Day We'll Do down the road is like my favorite lyrics from Bad Omens. But it reminds me a little bit about the lessons you learn in recovery, right? And so Glass Houses talks about, I see through you. I know who you are because I've seen the devil more than I've seen God, right? And so I can't even get chills saying that because there are certain skills you acquire in long-term recovery. Like when you have been at the bottom, you understand how the enemy operates because at times you've been the enemy, right? And so when you've been in that camp, you can kind of begin to see patterns and behaviors that are somewhat vampiric from people. It's like, you know, who are you? You think you can fool me? You can't. I've been there, right? I've been there. And so I count it all as gain. I truly do. Like when you look back in hindsight, there's so many things that have been so incredibly difficult to navigate. Such is life, right? And like people say, well, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Well, that's not necessarily true because there's a lot of people that get fatally wounded by things and it just takes them years to die, right? I've got a friend of mine recently was telling me about somebody else that we know and love, told me a story that he found out that he had been raising a child that wasn't his. He got divorced, and like the month after it happened, his mom died out of nowhere. 6 months later, his dad died out of nowhere, right? And they believe kind of his dad just kind of grieved himself to death. And he said, Steve, he's never been the same. He's never been the same person. And I think to myself, how could he be, right? So before we start throwing around these euphemisms, right, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, I can assure you he is not in a condition of strength right now. He's a weak person because life hadn't been fair to him, right? So it's important to understand that too. None of these euphemisms we use are absolute. But the thing that I have learned, you look back in hindsight, I had this discussion with somebody that I loved right now this morning. It's really going through a real challenging situation. I'm not going to give you any details because it's not important. And so as I talk to her, I say, you are a strong person. And then they just break down and start crying. I said, hey, it's okay to let it out. That's part of gathering strength. Sometimes you've got to kill what holds you. Let it out. Let it out. Let's admit what scares us. Let's, you know, we'll conduct the autopsy together. Let's get it out there. Because if you're going to sit there and suffer in silence, you're going to stay in a position of weakness. So let's get it out. Let's talk through it, right? You've been through this. You've been through that. And you came out the other side not as a survivor, but an overcomer. You look back at that stuff, and there are so many things now that you can intuitively handle that used to absolutely be a gut punch. You can handle this too. And sometimes we just need a cheerleader to remind us of that. And so I use this platform not just to talk about Mississippi State, not just to talk about music, but to hopefully be a cheerleader for you. Because maybe there's something you're dealing with that you can't talk to anybody else about. You can talk to me about it. You can find me on social media, anonymity guaranteed. And I've had some listeners do that. I had somebody reach out to me and say, man, you know, my grandfather killed himself, my dad killed himself, and I'm afraid I want to do the same thing. And I'm like, you know, you can break the cycle. Is that a legacy you want to hand down to your son? That's just a rite of passage? It is a familial rite of passage? It can stop with you. You can be the hero and change your family tree forever. You don't have to do this because somebody else did. That's about as raw as it gets, man. And I've had people that have contacted me about their relationship stuff. And a lot of these people are in recovery and some aren't. They're like, you don't know what I'm dealing with. And I have nowhere else to turn. And that is the saddest thing to me, is that they would have to turn to a complete stranger. And they feel like they know me. And I'm so incredibly blessed to be in the position that I'm in, where I can sometimes, you know, provide a little bit of light in the darkness. One of the saddest things that I remember, and it's been about a year since I've had any contact with this person. Matter of fact, I messaged them yesterday to say, it's been about a year since I've heard from you. Just checking in. Hope you're doing okay. And this person had been in an abusive relationship, an abusive marriage on multiple levels. There was been infidelity, been all kind of issues like that. And so she left, bought a house, everything, you know, was about to start life, waiting for the divorce to be final. And then he went to her family and kind of manipulated them into manipulating her to go back. And she messaged me, and we corresponded for a while. And she said, sometimes I think you're the only person that knows how I really feel. That, to me, is terrible. She said, I feel like I have nowhere to turn, because my family forced me back into an abusive marriage that I had escaped. That is brutal, man. It's one of the saddest stories I can ever share with you. So I have no idea if I'll get a response. I hadn't got one yet. But I want you to know that you are not alone. And as I told my loved one this morning, you are not alone, no matter what that little voice tells you. Don't dive terminal uniqueness. Don't think you're the only person that's ever experienced this, because you haven't. But what happens is that little voice in your head, nobody's going to understand. Nobody loves you like this. Let's just keep this little dark secret to ourselves, right? And that's where you're wrong. You heal by talking. It takes a lot of strength to admit weakness. When you're scared and afraid and feel like that you're at your wits' end, you've got to have somebody you can tell everything to. And I hope you have that person. And if you don't, you need to find them, whether it be a therapist, a counselor, a pastor, a great friend or whatever. And I know it's so difficult sometimes, especially for men, for us to go out and admit that we're struggling with something, because we're always ranking the pack and we don't want our weakness to be weaponized against us. And that's not gender specific, but there's a lot of stubbornness on the male gender side of things that we are reluctant to ask for help. Let me tell you this, the people that love you would rather you ask for help about something that could be embarrassing than they go to your funeral. I can promise you that. On behalf of everybody that loves you, let me tell you, they want to help you. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti, my friend, at Dogmatic67 on X. That's DAWGMATIC67. And you can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. We do get behind, but we'll get caught up after a while. Roy, you know, gets a little bit behind. Summer months can be difficult, and then we'll get caught up, all right? But we do appreciate your support. And again, hit me up on all forms of social media at Scout Steve R. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, we love Campus Bookmart. We do. We love them. because they have the stuff we want. When it's gift buying time in your life, don't overthink it. Don't try to build a better mousetrap. Just buy the Mississippi State fans on your gift buying list, Mississippi State merch. Whether it's apparel, gift ideas, decorative items, anything you need for the home, the office, the dorm, you can find it at Campus Bookmart. Miss Kathy Brown does an amazing job outfitting that store with the latest in Mississippi State wares. You owe it to yourself to support a Starkville business and get maroon from people that know what maroon looks like. Yeah. You go by one of these third-party vendors, man, you may end up getting a crimson shirt with a Mississippi State logo on it, right? I am a fan of the interlocking, so I'd encourage you to get some interlocking merch to outfit your family for the upcoming football season. And as I always mention to those diploma frames, what a great and thoughtful gift that will stay with your Bulldog graduate for years to come. You can be the favorite aunt, uncle, parent, grandparent, whatever, by getting a diploma frame directly from a Mississippi State vendor. That's Campus Bookmart. If you can't visit them next time you come to town, I'd encourage you to do so. But if you can't, perhaps you live out in a mission field and you want to still support a Starkville business and make sure you get real Mississippi State merchandise, visit them on the World Wide Web, courtesy of Al Gore's internet at campusbookmart.net. By being a loyal Barnyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. And that gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. All right. Big news yesterday as Ben Davis, our Bulldog reliever, signed with the Colorado Rockies and got better than expected. Didn't get full slot, but man, did much better than we expected. You know, senior signs are often a little bit dicey, right? But Big Ben gets $447,500, slot value of $755,300. So a little over $300K under slot, but man, what a great deal for Ben. You know, Ben's getting married next year. Ben, you got more than enough money now to get a head start at life, have a great honeymoon, and also pay for a really nice wedding, right? Don't go spend it all in one place. But man, what a great head start at life. Maybe you got some student loans to pay off. I don't know. But nevertheless, great for Ben. That leaves just one drafted Bulldog left to sign. That's Aiden Teal, and we do expect him to sign. And by the time you listen to the show, maybe he has. The deadline is Monday, 4 o'clock Central. And we do expect Aiden to come to terms. Now, as shared before, prospects with leverage in rounds 11 through 20 typically get 150. When they're drafted in the 11th round, they typically get some bonus pool money too. So maybe it's a quarter mil, maybe it's $300,000, we don't know. But Aiden's not going to sign for chump change, and it's probably in his best interest to go ahead and sign, and that is the expectation. And then we'll kind of see where things go. Because, again, you lose Aiden Teal. Now, you expected to lose him at the beginning of the year. By the end of the year, his stock was down a little. You know, we thought he'd be an all-SEC performer, but injuries kind of got in the way there. I think some people kind of unfairly view Aiden through the Texas A&M yips night when he lost a couple balls in the lights there. That's not who he is. It was just a bad night, okay? Guy's a good ball player. He's a great ball player and a great prospect. And did some big things for us early, and then he had the illness. You know, he lost some weight, and then he had the ball off his foot. It was just a lot of things that kind of hampered his ability. And we're grateful that he's come our way and wish we'd have got the full 100% Aiden Teal experience. Had we done so, he's probably drafted the top 10 rounds, right? So we do expect him to sign. And so, again, that'll leave you with three high school signees drafted and signed, including Rocco Maniscalco, now $3.5 million. Do you expect that? Oh, it's great. It's big money. It's good work if you can get it. Denton Lord, of course, would remain the last Bulldog signee. Of course, he's already on campus. But, you know, you never know, right, how much money on a draft and follow guy may get. They may have some other guys night sign and come back and offer him some money. So until the deadline passes, you got to, you know, you feel good about where he sits because he's in Starkville. But again, you'll feel a whole lot better once the deadline passes. And again, that's 4 o'clock on Monday, and today being Wednesday, you know, things are kind of counting down as guys begin to kind of figure all this stuff out. That's the thing, you know, again, it occupies so much of our time in the month of July, even though it's kind of a foregone conclusion how a lot of things are going to go. You know, until they're over and done with, you know, you want to believe that it's all going to be worked the way you want it to. And remember how closely we all tracked the California Angels, you know, some time ago was, you know, Dave Marchand and Ryan Prager. You know, the two guys that didn't sign that year, both of them directly led to Mississippi State losing players. It's terrible. But that's just kind of how life works. But, yeah, with just a few days left, pretty much, you know, a lot of the guys in the top 10 rounds have already signed. There's a few holdouts there. But, again, we fully expect that to be, you know, what it typically is. Again, teams are penalized by not signing guys. And, you know, again, these guys aren't always doing the best of job keeping these databases up to date. And, you know, that's, you know, for people like me that are dependent on this information, I know you guys is kind of casual, you know, stuff, right? You know, when we report it, you go read it. You're not going to go digging for it. But it's stuff for us. You know, we depend on that. And sometimes stuff doesn't get reported as quickly as it should. You know, Grady Emerson agreed to terms today with the Rays, you know, Texas signee, but that hasn't been updated in a database. You can find some tweets out there about it. All that is important. But looking here at the Twins, and hopefully this database is up to date, hopefully, and it's not. So, but there's a lot of guys, of course, ahead of Aiden Teal that have already signed, including Carson Tenney, of course, from the catcher from Texas, and Tommy Lepore, who was a pitcher that we chased and ultimately landed at TCU. He was a fourth-round pick of the Twins. He has already come to terms, too. So if memory serves me correct, I think everybody, but maybe one guy between Teal and the first pick, have come to terms. I think that's right. But hopefully Aiden Teal will come to terms in the next day or two, and we can get that article out to you guys, too, just kind of recapping the draft in its totality. We're ready to move forward. I'm sure you're ready to move forward as well. But that's where things sit today. And so then you have to ask yourself, okay, losing three position players out of the signing class and then losing Aiden Teal, you know, that's a position guy you could have gotten back. But again, the expectation was always for him to sign. You begin to wonder now, does Mississippi State take one more bat? And I think that's something you've got to see what the value is left in the portal. I'll have an article on that tomorrow, just kind of letting you guys know kind of what's still out there, maybe in the top 250 or 300. And I don't know if we get a guy at that point, because what I mean by that is it may not be a top guy just because of the fact that we've already signed so much. And guys are going to want an opportunity to go play somewhere. So you may get a guy outside of the top 250 or even the top 300 or 400 that's willing to come in here and just kind of be a glue guy, kind of be a Tanner Leggett, you know, a guy that's just kind of a quality utility reserve. Because I think you pretty much know what your lineup's going to look like by now. But, again, I don't know what Brian O'Connor's thinking, but I know we're done with pitching. But it could be a scenario, again, if you could get a best available bat that has some position flex, that's something to kind of consider. And again, you don't want to rush out and do that now because there's still teams out there that are signing free agent deals. So you may go out and identify a guy, and then all of a sudden, right at the deadline, somebody comes in and offers him a free agent deal for, you know, $50,000, and they just jump on it. Well, then you're right back to square one. So I think it's probably the smart thing to wait to get through the signing deadline and then just kind of evaluate what's available and how they fit into the construct of your roster. So still, I don't think the portal class is completely done, but I don't think we sign a guy just to sign a guy. If we don't find a guy that has some value, then we kind of stick with what we got. We're going to have a great team right out of the gate. We believe that. Of course, there's always the you know, the adjustment, you know, moving up to SEC play, right? Well, we don't start SEC play until around March 15th. So these guys that come in will get the benefit of hitting against SEC pitching all fall, in the spring training, and then the first month of the season to ensure they're ready to go. And you don't know what you're going to do with an SEC breaking ball until you see it. And that's for everybody. But what's interesting, too, like I ran some numbers yesterday, you know, kind of about what we've got coming back and what we've got coming in and kind of what we lost. And the point that I tried to make, too, a lot of people are like, hey, well, how do we play replace Ace Reese? Well, we've already done that with Jacob Parker. You know, Jacob Parker now becomes the premium bat in your order. Now you got to backfill behind him. Now who replaces Jacob Parker? Because Jacob is moving up to take that two or three hole spot occupied by Ace Reese and become the most dangerous bat in your order. Jacob Parker actually hit home runs more often than Ace Reese did. Ace led us with 24. Jacob had 18. Ace also had more bats. Now, Kevin Malewski had a great home run to at bat ratio, as you guys know. It was an incredible stat line. And so we've got some pieces that we're going to bring in, and I wrote a big commentary on both the hitting and the pitching side on Tuesday, just to kind of give you guys an idea of kind of what we've got coming in. And people keep asking me, you know, Steve, how do you think this lineup plays out? Well, it's way too early to tell. Like I ask, people ask me all the time, which of these young pitchers do you think will contribute this year? Well, I'd like to see them pitch first, okay? And you know, we've had guys in the past that have been like Gatorade players of the year from their own state, and then they come here and they can't even get outs in a midweek game, right? We've had some other guys that are just kind of scratching dent that have shown up and just done a tremendous job, right? Guys that maybe weren't highly recruited, but we were able to find, to kind of refine a skill set to find a role for them. And so that understood, that Wilson Anderson, Denton Lord, Landon Brown, those are real dudes, right? I had somebody in college baseball tell me yesterday, Mississippi State may have the deepest pitching staff in the country. He goes, Steve, you guys may be able to run out 12 or 14 different dudes next year and get outs. You know, not just guys to go out there and mop up innings. He goes, you guys are in a very unique situation. He goes, yeah, D1 baseball, you know, 10 of 11 guys pick state to go to Omaha. He goes, I think every coach in the Southeastern Conference will do the same. He goes, in fact, I would say it'll be State or LSU is the preseason SEC champ next year, picked to win the league. He said, that's how incredible this roster that Brian O'Connor and Justin Parker and the staff have put together. And it's good to get validating opinions from other people in college baseball that maybe don't have a rooting interest in Mississippi State. You know, people that would say, you know what, objectively looking at this, you know, when you look at what State has put together, he goes, I'm surprised you guys got the arms you got because of what you got coming back. He said, of course, Parker did a good job, you know, selling these guys on, hey, if you're good enough to come in here and start, you can start. But if not, you're going to work in the bullpen. We're going to have a role for you no matter what you do. We want you. And, you know, you look at Thomas Allen, right, a freshman All-American for Louisiana Tech. He had opportunities to go other places and start, or at least compete for starting opportunities. Multiple of the SEC schools that chased him are having to rebuild their weekend rotation. We're not, and then we get him. And if you recall, those of you that tracked his recruitment, early on there were people that were saying that he was going to commit to Arkansas and that his decision was imminent in favor of the Razorbacks. It's not what happened. And, of course, when that began to make the rounds, it was so interesting. When that report came out that he picked Arkansas, he was on campus at Mississippi State. He was still on his official visit. And so that proved to be an erroneous report. And everybody's got sources and everybody – I mean, you're only as good as your sources, right? When it comes to stuff like this, you're relying on secondhand information a lot of times. But this is the guy that turned down Arkansas and LSU to come to Mississippi State. I don't know if you've paid attention, but LSU and Arkansas both have weekend spots available. That's an important aspect, too. He still chose Mississippi State. It's so interesting, too. Talking with Allen, he said, you know, when I took some of these trips, you know, he said it felt a little bit like being a fish out of water. You know, he said, I'm from small town Louisiana. He goes, man, when I rolled into Starkville, it was like being from Benton. You know, he said it just felt like home. And Starkville's not for everybody. Baton Rouge is not for everybody. Gainesville, Florida is not for everybody. You know, I remember D. Arrington? You remember him? He had some concussion problems that stayed on the football side and didn't finish his career, right? He ended up getting taken to medical. D. Arrington was the number one safety in the state of Mississippi for his class. From Stone County High School, down around Wiggins, right? Yeah, Sam Hintz, one of the greatest Tomcats in history, and Big Black from Robin Big. But anyway, D. Arrington loved Mississippi State. And then we worried, you know, he had to go to Alabama. So he goes to Alabama, right? And they go out there, and there's all this glitz and glamour and fireworks and marching bands and dancing girls, and it freaked him out. He's like, that's just not for me. You know, I know what I'm going to get at Mississippi State. You know, he's a rural kid. And so he came to Mississippi State, and again, his career was derailed by injuries. But there are Mississippi State kids, and there are Ole Miss kids, and there's LSU kids, and there's Alabama kids. And there's a lot of kids that are kind of, you know, can be good either place. But there are some guys that are just going to thrive in this environment because that's where they're more comfortable. They don't need the rock concert to make a decision. Let me come in, see the stadium, talk to the coaches, find out what my rev share is going to be and what their development plan for me is, and then we'll just kind of move forward. Not everybody is looking for Lollapalooza. Some people just want to go to a coffee shop and hear somebody play on an acoustic guitar, right? And there's one reason they make vanilla and they make chocolate ice cream, right? I mean, different strokes for different folks. We can repeat all the cliches we want. But we want young men that want to be here because they see value in our campus, our institution, and ultimately our baseball program. And we want them to come through here and recognize that their dreams can come true right here in Starkville, Mississippi. And we've done a good job of selling that in recent years. Final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, especially when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. Life is short, death is certain, and as Taco Bell used to tell us, we got to live mas, right? So make some memories with the people you love, respect, and cherish the most. It's so nice to have everybody under one roof. You know, this past week, you know, we went on vacation. It was just so great to be able to be present with the people that mean the most to me. I don't get to do that enough, and I'm sure you feel the same way. And the truth of the matter is when you love people, it's never enough. So make some special plans with some special people in your life at a special place, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will pop up, and you can peruse pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests. The full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area. And not pictured, of course, is the expansive parking lot they have there. It was the old renovated country club clubhouse, so they had plenty of parking for all those golfers, and they got plenty of parking for you and your guest. Now, when you Google, you're going to see some booking options pop up too. Airbnb, Vrbo, but if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website at promo code BSR10. That's BSR10, the number 10, to get your 10% discount off your stay. Guys, the clubhouse is just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. So if it's a ball game weekend for you, you can do your tailgating right there. Then you get home, back to the clubhouse after a ball game, and you know, kick back, watch some football in that great big TV in that great expansive living room, right? Maybe have a cold one. I don't know what your needs are, but I know this. I know the accommodations that can bring a very special week or weekend to your life. It's open 365 days a year. Check availability today at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. All right. Mississippi State added Matt Wells today as an offensive consultant, and that kind of led me to kind of thinking about Jeff Lebby's staff, right? the changes. That was a big thing last year. You know, people were like, hey, are we just going to run it back? And, you know, tried to encourage people to be patient with that aspect of things and allow coach to work through it. Well, we did. And there were several changes. But I want to go back to, like, adding Philip Montgomery. It's a veteran coach that's been a head coach before. He is your associate head coach for offense and will lead the wide receivers. Of course, he replaces Coach Chad Bumpus, Bulldog legend, that's now back at Utah. But Montgomery, a new addition to the staff. Anthony Tucker, the running backs coach, has been there the entire time. And I think it's pretty safe to say we've had pretty good running back play in the Levy era. Zach Arnett, of course, your new defensive coordinator. That's brand new. Replacing Coleman Hutzler, who's been there the last couple of years. And then Matt Brock comes back from UConn, be his first year back in maroon and white. That's another change in the offseason. Corey Bell, the much maligned Corey Bell, has been there throughout the Levy era. And I think last year people kind of realized, you know, Corey Bell's in pretty good job. First year, you didn't think so. Last year, you see the jump that Kelly Jones made, and you're like, you know what? Maybe this guy with the right personnel can be a great coach. And, guys, he got his portal work done, like, the first week to 10 days. Really changed the look of that room. John Cooper, of course, been with us a while now, and very heavy tight end class in the last recruiting class. And I think we've gotten some pretty good play out of the tight ends. It'll be interesting to see what Riley Williams does this year. We're going to need him to be good. Vincent Dancy, of course, joined the staff last year, part of the offseason renovation on defense after year one. Kevin Johns, of course, one of the better assistant coach additions that we've made since last year. This is a guy that's coached quarterbacks throughout his career. A lot of people didn't think we could get him. We did. It's a big coup for Jeff Lebby, of course. Matt Holachek, of course, got his first on-the-field experience. Was one of Lebby's guys, right? And followed Jeff to Mississippi State. Spent 2 years. Well, now Kevin Johns replaces him. Phil Lothold, of course, came over last year. It was his first year with the program. Came over after the portal class closed at the end of 2024. So this is his second full year, and these are his guys, right? We'll see how things go. Cliff Odom, of course, has been with us the full time, too. Special teams actually had some good moments last year. You remember the downside of it all, right? But for the most part, like Ethan Pulliam, one of the best punters in the country. Kyle Ferry, one of the better kickers in the conference, right? And so we need to be better than we were last year, but it's not as doom as gloom as some people made it out to be. Evan Harvey, of course, has been with us a while, too. Recently promoted to the assistant football coach for safeties. Kiwi Thompson joined the program in the offseason. That's a great addition for State. You're starting to kind of see that payoff some on the recruiting side. And then Ty Warren, of course, his first year as your defensive line coach. Dave Turner had moved to a consultant. And now he's moving away from the game. Some family concerns there. We wish the Turner family the absolute best. Paul Rhodes has now been with us 2 years. And what you could tell last year in the secondary, the defensive backfield was better with Paul Rhodes' influence. It's an important part of it. Desmond Lindsay joined the program in the offseason, making the move. Former Southern Miss assistant wide receiver coach, has done a really good job on the recruiting side. He's gotten State in the game with some guys. He's a very gregarious guy, too. I think you'll really like him when you get a chance to meet him. Now, the assistant D-line coach is Demario Rasko, of course, had some great years at LSU. This is his first year with the program. Kind of eager to see how that all plays out. Of course, you bring back Mason Miller as an offensive line consultant. That's a very popular move. Brandon Fusco, another NFL guy, joining Phil Lothold. We saw some of his work in the summer camps and in spring practice, and appears to be a really good addition as well. And there's a few more, analyst-type positions that we filled. You know, you bring Jed Johnson back to go along with Earl Thompson, and those guys certainly understand, what it means to wear the uniform and the expectations of being here. And then Hayes Hammond, of course, again, young man, comes from a great football family. Had some great years as our deep snapper, and he's the special teams fellow. But, I mention all of this because it's a different coaching staff for the most part. And again, you go back and you begin to think about, and let's just kind of go back and look while we're here together. That 2024 staff, Coleman Hutzler is gone. Matt Barnes is gone. Coach Bumpus is gone. Holacek is gone. Coach Turner is gone. Cody Kennedy is gone. Alex Jackson, your assistant offensive line coach, gone. And so I just mentioned that just because I think it's important for people to kind of understand that we haven't just run it back. When you go back and think about that first staff, and of course, the coaching responsibilities have changed a lot. You can pretty much have as many coaches as you want. You can just only have so many guys on the road recruiting. But Tucker's been here the whole time. And again, I think it's fair to say running backs have been good, and they should be even better this year. And then Corey Bell, again, first year, sketchy. Last year, better personnel this year. John Cooper, of course, we talked about him. And Cliff Odom. But again, you begin to think about that initial staff for Jeff Lebby. There's just four guys back. There are four guys that made it to year three. And so I think a lot of our fans maybe just hadn't kept up as closely as maybe they should. But I think it's important to point out that Jeff Lebby has done his best to make the adjustments that he deems necessary to move this football program forward on both sides of the line. It's one of the things, like the Leach guys all came in, and it was like they were part of a cult, right? They're all air raid guys. They all believe in Mike Leach. They all absolutely are bought into the system, and they were a unit, right? Well, Jeff Lebby brought in a lot of guys that he knew and trust. And then as the years went along, after 2 years, he kind of settled some things out. And I think it's interesting, too, when I go back and I think about Dan Mullen, right? And I hope that Jeff Lebby can bring those types of results. I mean, I know we all do. But when I go back and I think about that first Dan Mullen staff, right? You had John Hevesy, of course, did some really good things at Mississippi State. And but Hev was a guy that was at Florida, and then all of a sudden they made some changes, and he was like the interior offensive line thing. And so Mullen, it was easy to bring him in. And, of course, Hud was here the 1 year and then took the job at UL Lafayette. Tony Hughes, of course, was this a long time. Greg Knox was. Les Kenning was a university hire. That's a guy that we knew and loved Les and very grateful for his friendship over the years. Scott Salish, of course, was a Mullen guy that had not had a ton of coaching experience but was with us for a while, was ultimately replaced by DJ Looney a little bit later in the process. God rest his soul. Carl Torbush was your first-year defensive coordinator. Of course, DT, right? And so I mentioned that just because that first staff for Mullen were guys that he knew and guys that were kind of hired to help by other people. Well, of course, Torbush leaves. You bring in Manny Diaz, who's now the head coach at Duke and has done some good things. Again, I guess Hutchins was with us 2 years. Then we hired Miranda, but sometimes it takes a couple of years for a first-time head coach to settle his staff. And I think when you look at what Jeff Lebby has done and the people that he has brought in with the level of experience that they bring with them, this is without a doubt the best coaching staff that Jeff Lebby has had at Mississippi State, period. And then you look at this roster, it's the most talent that he's had at Mississippi State. And then you look on the defensive side of things, and you've got a guy, Zach Arnett, that you never have to say anything to about taking autonomy for defense. And Zach obviously comes in with a bit of a chip on his shoulder for all the right reasons. So I know a lot of people are down on this football program. I believe that we're going to be better than people expect. And I've always been a guy that's been, people say, Steve, are you glass half full or half empty? I'm just happy to have a glass. But all that I understood, I am a little more bullish about this team than some other people are. And I think that's important for everybody to understand the steps that we have taken to improve the quality of the roster, but also the quality of the coaching staff since the 2025 Egg Bowl. If you hadn't done so, visit dirtynoblebook.com. You get signed copies of all my sports titles. Of course, that's Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dogpile, The Dude, and the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. And if you need a redemption story, perhaps some encouragement, perhaps that's the book for you. Come float with us at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. You can speak directly to my beautiful wife, Dana, at 662-268-7601. And come join us over at jeanspage.com. That's a great time to join. Get a discount off the annual subscription price, and that'll lock you in all the way through football season, all the way through men's and women's basketball, all the way through baseball, all the way through signing day, spring football, prospect camps, postseason baseball, and into the dog days of summer next year. And if you're not completely satisfied this time next year with the quality of content you're getting from us, you don't have to renew. And if you're a full-paying subscriber, if you take advantage of the discount, you're not eligible for this. But if you're willing to just go ahead and pay the full price, you get a complimentary subscription to Paramount Plus. How cool is that, right? Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way that we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.